This is the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. It is episode 300. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL wire site, of course, covering the Arizona Cardinals. And my co-host is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com. His site is from the SB Nation family of blogs, and we've been covering the Cardinals for forever, lifelong fans. Obviously, episode 300, we've been doing this show a long time, dating back to 2013, and this is our 2021 Cardinals free agency preview, as we are, technically, we're recording on a Tuesday night. At the start of next week, we will get the quote-unquote legal tampering period, and then free agency officially opens with the new league year Wednesday afternoon. And that's when all the fun officially begins. The trades that have been agreed to can become real. They can actually occur. Teams have to get under the salary cap, which is going to be interesting to see. But what we're going to start with in this show. So we'll be talking free agency, the franchise tag. Tuesday was the deadline. There were nine that are right now on the franchise tag. What does it mean for the free agent targets out there now? What does it mean for the fact that the Cardinals didn't use it? We'll go through and think and kind of try and make some predictions of the players who will manage to re-sign before free agency begins. Who are the guys that are going to test the market and go elsewhere, and who might actually be back after testing the markets? And then for the last couple of segments, we're going to focus on free agents that the Cardinals can sign. Who are the guys on offense and on defense, and even some of the specialists, because the Cardinals have major special teams, free agency happening. Who are the guys on the market who would fit and might be a splash or might be a value? So that's everything we're going to talk about on this edition of the show. Let's talk about the franchise tag. First and foremost, nine players were tagged. If we want to include Dak Prescott, that is number 10, but he has since agreed to a massive deal, 4 years, $160 million with the Dallas Cowboys, and $66 million in signing bonus. This year alone, he will get $75 million in cash. That's pretty fantastic. But he's already locked in. You got the other nine players who signed, who were franchise tagged. There's receiver Allen Robinson, Chicago Bears. Taylor Moten, tackle for the Carolina Panthers. Justin Simmons, safety for the Denver Broncos. Cam Robinson, Jacksonville Jaguars, tackle. Leonard Williams, defensive tackle for the Giants. Marcus May, safety for the Jets. Brandon Scherff, again, for the Washington football team, the guard. Tampa Bay Bucks, they franchise-tagged receiver Chris Godwin. And the Saints, they protected tagging safety Marcus Williams. Some interesting names on that list. For you, are there any surprises?
Yeah, just Cam Robinson. Everybody else made sense. We kind of saw it coming. I always get a little surprised when I see safeties franchise tag, Marcus May and Justin Simmons. Simmons is an all-pro. May's a very good player, don't get me wrong, but he's, I was a little bit surprised for that. But, I mean, I think Cam Robinson was really the surprise of the whole thing, just because, one, that's going to be a huge price tag for 1 year, and two, when healthy, he's been a good player, but he's struggled with injury sans last year. He played 15 games as rookie, only played two games his second year, 14 games in 19, and then he finally got all 16 games. Again, it's not that he's bad. It just seems like quite the financial investment for a guy that's, not played 1,000 snaps in a season yet.
Right, and I think Well, if you look at it, it feels like he's going through the stage of the DJ Humphreys did. The Cardinals didn't franchise tag him, but they also paid him roughly what Cam Robinson will get paid this year. So there's that hope that perhaps he's just turning the corner. Now, it also shows, hey, we got to have someone on the roster we can trust to protect our, you know, Trevor Lawrence, who will be under center this year. And plus, you know, there's the one thing with the Jaguars they didn't have to worry about. They have no problems with the cap. So they could afford to tag him this year and not have it affect negatively their cap situation, which is where a lot of these other teams, in fact, well, one of the guys that is notably not on here, the Arizona Cardinals did not use any of their tags this year. Last year, they used the transition tag on Kenyon Drake. They didn't transition tag anyone. They didn't franchise tag Drake. They didn't franchise tag Patrick Peterson. They didn't franchise tag Hassan Reddick. It really isn't a surprise, after all, but he was probably the most likely candidate of all. And one obvious negative to using that cap, that tag, would have been then the Cardinals, as of right now, have an estimate, I think, $12.5 million to tag Hassan Reddick, would have eaten $13 million because there is no cap relief because it's a one-year deal. So I think some of, like, only nine, which was less than last year's, were tagged. I think that salary cap has a little bit to do with it because teams want to have the flexibility to sign players, and maybe we thought we're going to see a lot of one-year deals. I think we might see a lot of minimum one-year deals later, but I think still at the beginning of free agency, it's not going to be one-year deals because they want to push some of that cap hit into 2022 and 2023 when the cap goes back up. They're expecting a new TV deal. So I'm not surprised by the guys that got franchise tagged. I am mildly surprised that the Lions didn't use any of them. They didn't protect Romeo Okwara, their pass rusher. They didn't protect Kenny Golladay, which now makes Golladay the number one receiver on the market. You know, we've talked about for the Cardinals, you know, some, if they were going to make a splash at receiver, Allen Robinson, Chris Godwin might have been a good picks to do that, but they're not going anywhere. How does this affect, how do the guys on the tag now affect how free agency is going to look like then?
You know, there's a couple names that make a big difference in my opinion. Allen Robinson and Chris Godwin are the first two because those were guys that you can truly kind of build an offense around. They've shown that they can, I mean, Godwin was a star before Tom Brady and Bruce Arians. And then, obviously, Allen Robinson was a star in Jacksonville and then in Chicago with Mitch Trubisky. So, I mean, that guy can play with anyone.
Right. He's quarterback proof.
Right. And so those are tough. You know, from there's not a ton of guys. I mean, Brandon Scherff, again, Leonard Williams, again. I mean, like I said, May and Simmons are definitely really good. Don't get me wrong. I just surprised that they're being franchised. So, I don't see any name that you're like, oh, this is going to be tough. After the franchise tags came out, I think more than anything, and something we're going to discuss, obviously, is that we are more surprised to see the guys that didn't get franchise tagged.
Right. Let's talk about that, because of this nine players, there does not include a pass rusher, at least one of your traditional edge pass rushers, not a single one, which means every single one, unless they re-sign with their team, is going to hit the market. That this is something that will affect it, particularly the Cardinals and Hassan Reddick, because I think Reddick is looking for a big payday multi-year. He might not have the market, and I've kind of thought this a little bit. I've thought for a little bit that as things go, while he could get paid big, like we have seen in other pass rushers in the past. He could also find a really weak market, just like Marcus Golden did a year ago. And Marcus Golden, coming off a 10-sack season with the Giants, it wasn't even his first double-digit sack season, because he had 11.5 with the Cardinals in 2016. And then he got 10, and then he had no market at all. The money dried up. Part of it was the pandemic and the how free agency ended up going, but he ended up returning to the Giants on an obscure, unrestricted free agent tender that paid him, what was it, $3.75 million, and ultimately getting traded to the Cardinals. Reddick might not have the market that you would want. Because if we look at the best free agents out there, here's some of the names of the pass rushers for the edge rushers that are now technically going to be available, unless there's a long-term deal, if they re-sign before Wednesday. But you've got Shaq Barrett, 19.5 sacks in 2019. You've got Matt Judon. You've got Yannick Ngakoue. You've got Romeo Okwara from Detroit. You've got Carl Lawson. You've got Leonard Floyd, who had himself at. So if you're looking at top free agent pass rushers, Reddick might not technically, even though he had the 12.5 sacks, in terms of if you were to rank the pass rushers, he might not even crack the top 10.
Yeah, and that's the big thing. And you look at his play was similar to Bud Dupree, a guy that was drafted, I believe, the year before Reddick. And obviously, Dupree got to play on the edge his whole career. But you look at what Dupree did the one big year and then got franchised and then came back hurt. Had 8 sacks this year, I believe it was. So he had a solid season, but I just think that you're not shocked after the J.J. Watt signing that he was not that he was not franchise tagged, because the market is going to be A, loaded with pass rushers, and B, unless he signs with a team like Indy or Jacksonville, there's not going to be a lot of teams looking to sign undersized pass rushers that only have one
good year, right?
And to big money.
Correct.
And so you brought this up off the air. We could be looking at a situation where, you know, the Cardinals might be able to get him to come back on a 1 year, you know, $7 to $9 million type contract that says, hey, run it back, do it again. And then, you know, then they'll probably franchise tag him or something to that nature.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it'll be interesting. All it takes, obviously, is one team. All it takes is one team to really want him. But,
and there are some teams that have the money, and pass rushers are always in vogue, so it's not like we're saying it's going to be implausible.
But he does bring a little bit more risk because he doesn't feel as scheme independent. Because if you're going to use him in a 4-3, you either have to put him in a role where we know he struggled, or have a different type of role, kind of like Seattle did with Bruce Irvin, what the Lions did with Devon Kennard without dropping as much, because Kennard managed to have 7 sacks in the last 2 years before joining the Cardinals, playing the same type of position. So, but he's not as scheme flexible. He's undersized. Now, granted, he does have three things going for him. He's got a big season. He's 26 years old. And very athletic. And there's nothing there. You know that it's not going to be an issue of effort. He's never changed the effort level when he's played. It's just the effectiveness. And so you know you're going to get a hard worker. You know you get going to get someone who he wasn't just playing for a contract. He was finally in a scenario where he could have success, and the results finally came. The effort was always there. So you've got the right age. You've got the right athletic profile, maybe not the physical profile, and you've got a motor and a desire and a hunger. So those are all working in his favor by far. They're working in his favor. But when you've got the number of pass rushers on the market that you have, guys who have been productive over a longer period of time, are a little bit more scheme independent, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. If the Cardinals come back, I literally could see them getting him back on, say, a $4 to $5 million deal, which honestly, that's still a lot of money. It's just not big money. It's not what we want to see players get consistently. But in terms of building the Cardinals roster, that would work out fantastically because, you know, they're we'll talk about this in a little bit, but with the addition of J.J. Watt, and this is the question that people are like, so basically they picked a 32-year-old J.J. Watt over 26-year-old Hassan Reddick, and, you know, looking at age, okay, but if you're looking at careers, wouldn't you make that decision if you're trying to win now? And that's what the Cardinals are trying to do. They're trying to win now. And so to one-year wonder Hassan Reddick or three-time defensive player of the year J.J. Watt, whose tape looked really good still last year, who would you count on this year? I'd count on J.J. Watt.
Well, that's kind of, like you said, what it boils down to in the end is that there's a lot of, yes, I understand wanting to keep a young pass rusher like Reddick, but the Cardinals know more than anybody that of what Reddick is and what Reddick can do. And remember, Reddick was incredibly good this season. He broke out. He had 12 and a half sacks. He had, I think, 16 quarterback hits on the season. He had a good season. The issue you have is, you know, those 12 and a half sacks came in a small number of games.
Right.
There was a five-week stretch where he was completely unproductive from a sack production.
Right. If we break down, he had five in his first seven games, but I believe two or three of them came still in a part-time role. So he was a rotational guy, and I think when he took over the starting lineup for Chandler, I think in those two games he had he did get production, but then he went five straight weeks with no sacks. Then he had the five sack game, but it ended up being 7.5 sacks in his final four games. Now, to be fair, the pressure was still there in those five games, but shutout. And we were in, if you recall in previous shows, we wondered if the gig was up, in to lack of a better phrase, if he'd been figured out, because he had been productive, five sacks in seven games. And then when he was forced into a full-time role where he was playing almost every snap, if his effectiveness had waned as a result of that because of having to play every down. Turns out he just needed to do a little bit more. And so, yeah, there's a number of concerns there. I hope for his sake he gets paid. I really would like for him to be back. And hindsight, using the fifth-year option would have been ideal. However, it would have been foolish to exercise that option based on what we knew about Reddick a year ago. So it was the smart business decision that could end up paying off. We'll see. We'll see what happens, because I think Reddick, his market is, actually, honestly, there's three guys, the Cardinals, whose market I'm super intrigued to watch. That it's both Reddick, it's Patrick Peterson, and Kenyon Drake. Just what is the perception of all the three of those players outside of Arizona? Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk about the Cardinals free agents that they have and who we think will re-sign before free agency begins next week. I expect there will be some, but we'll talk about our predictions as to who that is. Let's come up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk about the free agents we think. Who are the guys that we think will, in fact, re-sign with the team before the markets open next week? The Cardinals traditionally don't make that. I'm sure there are some players they've already have agreements with. There's one thing I can recall. This is years ago, back when Mike Leach was still their long snapper, and he re-signed basically a couple of days before free agency began. And I happened to have a conversation with I can't remember if it was him or it was someone in his family, and they had the deal in place for some time, and the Cardinals were just waiting to announce it. And so for a lot of these players, there might be something already in place. If we're looking on the offensive side of the ball, do you see Brett Hundley coming back? I don't. I think he's out. I think he's gone. I think his 16 games being inactive last year was the signature. It was kind of the writing on the wall for me.
Yeah, and I mean, you and I wonder aloud if there was something to the report that came out, slightly prior to this season with maybe some potential legal trouble, and that the Cardinals decided that they weren't gonna take any course action until the legal consequences came out, but they also weren't going to let him be really a productive kind of member of the team. So, and like you said, I think being basically benched for the entire season showed that the Cardinals weren't interested in him anymore. You have that. I just don't see any way he comes back.
No. Let's go. I'm going to go through the guys on the offensive side of the ball I think will be signed before free agency starts. I think they get Dan Arnold back. Kelvin Beecham I'm not sold on, so I don't know. That's the one guy I'm not sure where he is at because he signed super late. And so with the performance that he had, is he going to look for something more? Kelvin Beecham's a possibility. So I think Dan Arnold's probably a lock. And after that, I think on the offensive side of the ball, that kind of I could see. And Trent Sherfield, I think he will sign without a restricted tag because I think they have so many special teamers that are free agents. It's kind of crazy. So they're not going to use a tender on him because you don't just do that for someone who only plays special teams. But I think he'll be back, maybe get, $1.5 million, which is more than the minimum. So Trent Sherfield, Dan Arnold, and maybe Kelvin Beecham on offense.
Yeah, and I think those are really the only three you could see. I don't see Drake coming back. I mean, I'm not as 100% confident as you are on Dan Arnold. I still lean he's back probably 75-80%, but, I wouldn't say it's a guarantee.
Yeah, I don't think I don't think there'll be much of a market for him. When I was reading about something, it was interesting because he's a really lean tight end who doesn't really block and didn't have a big productive year in the passing game. And he's worth more for the Cardinals than kind of anywhere else.
Well, not only that, but when you look at a guy like Robert Tonyan, who came out and, had a huge year for the Packers, probably should have been a Pro Bowler. And then you have a Dan Arnold. Those are polar opposite type of guys, right? Like Tonyan is a physical specimen that plays as you know, I call them two-way tight ends at this point because they're blockers and receivers. And he's, let's just be honest, more athletic than Arnold. Arnold is kind of a big receiving specialist. That's basically what he is at this point. And more than anything, he's a red zone threat. And so I think he's going to be a niche player, and the Cardinals probably more than most teams fit the niche that he is.
On defense, I think these are the guys that they get under contract. I've got a sneaky feeling that Marcus Golden might be one of those guys. I'm not 100% confident. I think that's a sneaky guy that I think if they get under the deadline. Other guys, Tanner Vallejo, Zeke Turner, probably both Chris Banjo and Charles Washington. None of them are going to be expensive. And then if I had to pick any of the cornerbacks, maybe it's Jonathan Joseph, who they re-sign. Just because of familiarity with Vance Joseph, get at least one vet there. I think Dennis Gardeck is a guy that they tender for the 1 year. I think original round is plenty coming off the ACL. Zeke Turner, I think they get to, like, they'll do like Trent Sherfield. They'll agree to something that's less than the tender. Tanner Vallejo, I think they like him. And interestingly, he quietly tied with Zeke Turner for the team lead in special teams tackles. And there's a little bit of upside on defense, I think. And I've talked about this on the show as well, is that if Isaiah Simmons is going to be in a full-time role but also plays other positions like he did at the end of last year, you're going to need a linebacker to come in that you can trust. And Tanner Vallejo has been very productive in limited roles on defense. And when he's stayed healthy, he's been very productive. And I think he'd be a nice fit back there, not expensive. A better linebacker in terms of playmaker than a guy, say, like Joe Walker was the year before. Charles Washington, he's a nice special teamer to have. And then Chris Banjo, who they might sign to he signed for the league minimum last year and ended up starting most of their games at safety. So I think he'll be a guy that they prioritize a little bit more because he does give them veteran experience. And he's a top-end special teams player as well. And then Jonathan Joseph for me, Drake Kirkpatrick, I don't think we saw on Instagram, he's not about this. If he signs on a minimum deal, it's not coming until right before training camp, this last year. And I think Jonathan Joseph might be willing to do that early on.
Yeah, the only name I'd add defensively, or there's two, I'd add Angelo Blackson, who I thought was their best defensive lineman last year. Obviously, I think that they're hoping with the addition of J.J. Watt and that they'll be able to get more from in terms of help from Leckie Fotu, Rashard Lawrence, and Jordan Phillips. But I would bring back Angelo Blackson. And Corey Peters is a guy I would bring back right around training camp if that's something he wants to do again.
That's my case. That's my thing on Corey Peters with the knee injury. My guess is he comes back once he's healthy, and if they haven't quite seen enough from Lawrence or Fotu to take that starting role at nose tackle, because you can plug Peters in and do that kind of easily.
Yep, and so I think those are the guys they prioritize. I think that we're both in agreement that we're not saying those are the guys that will be back, but that's, I think, how they'll prioritize.
And I think those are those are the easy ones to sign. Like they don't necessarily have the worth for another team, especially in an off season like this. They are worth re-signing now, and they are self-aware enough as to the market out there, whether it would be worth it to test the market, because those are the types of players you fill a roster with rather than plugging into lineups. And the problem with is if those guys don't re-sign, then the rosters get filled without them, and then they are left without a job, waiting for an injury or something to happen closer to training camp and things like that when more things happen. And so these are the guys who know that while they deserve to be on a roster, they're not, they know that they need to get signed early or they could be in trouble.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
All right, coming up next on the Res FC Red Podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's come back and talk about some of the bigger names on the roster. Who are the guys that we think will end up signing elsewhere? And if the market is tested, could they actually come back? That's coming up next on Res FC Red. We're back on the Res FC Red Podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We talked a little bit about Hassan Reddick. There are some higher profile players that the Cardinals have hitting the free agency, namely Kenyon Drake. Dan Arnold, I don't know if he's a bigger name, but the biggest ones are Kenyon Drake, Hassan Reddick, Patrick Peterson. I'm guessing all three of these players are going to find the market and are going to hit the market. I think Kenyon Drake probably does not come back for one reason or another. I think the Cardinals would like to go cheaper at running back, and as much as they like him, and I think he can probably, he proved he was a capable every down back, and so I think there is still a market out there for him. Reddick's interesting. We've already discussed him. And Patrick Peterson, my guess, if they don't re-sign him, he's going to end up signing elsewhere. I don't think he's still a quality player in this league, and if the Cardinals don't ink him before the deadline, before free agency actually begins, he's probably going to end up on a team that we regret seeing him go to, like Kansas City or Tampa Bay or the like. Because Kansas City, obviously, he'd be back with his bro Ty Matthew. And in Tampa, while they don't really need cornerbacks, because they pretty, but you reunite with Todd Bowles there. Maybe even San Francisco with James Betcher there. But who knows? I mean, you could also see him up in Seattle. I could totally see that happening, but I know he wants to be back. He's made that clear now. I think that's also been made clear that he still views himself as a top cornerback and wants to get paid commensurate to the talent that he believes he is. And I think the Cardinals are going to wait and see. If they don't re-sign him, I doubt he's back. And that'll be an interesting end to his legacy here in Arizona.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think Patrick's probably got an idea of what the Cardinals are willing to pay him. And I think I think that he probably takes it as an insult at this point. Just because, I mean, and I'm not trying to say this to be negative, but that's how those guys view things. They view if
money is respect, right? And if you're going to offer him less money, this means you respect him less than before.
And so I think that's, you know, a silly way to look at it for him, but I get it. But I would imagine, if they haven't already, that Patrick's agent knows a number the Cardinals are willing to pay him. And they can probably go find out if any other team's willing to offer them that type of money.
Absolutely.
And I think that's where it's going to be. It's hard to explain, because what I'm trying to say without saying is I think that Patrick's going to feel disrespected. And if he ends up signing elsewhere, it'll probably be similar to what we hear about Ty Matthew, and that the Cardinals were willing to pay him more, but as Jess said, well, I want to be paid basically for time served as well. I want to be compensated in that manner. And, you know, let's hope as Cardinals fans it doesn't get to that, but two, if it does, that he's not as successful as Ty Matthew.
Oh my
was.
Goodness, he turned like he, yeah. What good on Ty, and I understand. Like in hindsight, that looked foolish, but there was nothing about his play for the last year and a half that he was with the Cardinals that helped you really think, oh yeah, he's going to become that player that he was again. And lo and behold, he became the player that he was before. So good on him. He got healthy. He was fantastic. Now, Pat, it's going to be interesting. Like, and I mentioned this. So if a player is going to end up taking less than what they were already making, they'd rather do it for another team. And it kind of to prove a point that they still can do it. And it's just kind of interesting that way. Now, I'm sure that he's probably looking for at least what he made, I think, $12 million this last year. I don't think he's looking to go backwards. And probably the Cardinals are looking more max at the $10 million range, max, you know, like 2 years,
yeah, and
$20
million. And
which is what was that? The Joe Haden deal got? That was roughly what he got, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, and people might say, well, that's silly. You would lose Patrick Peterson over $2 million. But at the end, there has to be a max that you're willing to stop. And there also has to be an understanding of you can't always kick the can down the road. I mean, we saw the numbers today. The Cardinals are paying J.J. Watt for, what, 5 years?
Well, they basically pushed $7 million of dead money, just essentially. They're like, all right, 2023, they're $7.2 million and we won't have JJ around anymore. It was just a way to manipulate the cap. For those of you who don't know, the cap is in some ways an illusion, but you can't avoid the cap forever. Whatever you pay a guy, you're gonna, like, that signing bonus, you're going to have to count it against the cap at some point. It's going to come back to you eventually, but you can push it. And the league is okay with this. So JJ's got a 2-year deal that's actually written as a 5-year deal that voids after the second year. And it's simply just to let the cap hit go. So he's only going to count 4.9 this year, 15.9 next year. And then when his deal is up, unless they extend him, unless they make they change those voiding years to live years,
yeah.
And honestly, you know, you could probably see a scenario if he plays well these next 2 years where they just take those 3 years that were voided and turn them into live years with actual salary. And that would take him to his, he's got 32, 33, 30. So he'd be 32 and 33, and then 34, 35, 36. And then he could call it a career. You could potentially have him end his career in Arizona, and if he's great, well, it's fantastic. But yeah, you just have to play with the cap, and I think the Cardinals are trying to do as much as they can in this 2-year window before Kyler's contract is going to balloon. His contract is going to be manageable this year, next year, and even in 2023 if they use the fifth-year option rather than signing a big extension early. But yeah, come 2024, he's gonna be, we're talking 40 to 50 million per year average, and yeah. Then we're thinking Dak, somewhere between Dak and Patrick Mahomes. It's going to be somewhere between those two, because Kyler's going to be, you know, if we believe in Kyler, he's going to be that good, and he's going to be worth it.
And that's the thing, is A, if he wins, you know, if he's an all-pro or an MVP, because they're basically interchangeable in terms of contract negotiating power, and not like a third-team all-pro, but like if he's the first-team all-pro quarterback and or wins an MVP, or they win a Super Bowl, he'll probably set the new standard in terms of yearly compensation, and so that's, like Jess said, you're really looking at this as a 3-year window where, you know, obviously worst case in terms of the finances, you're looking at 3 years until you're going to have to pay him
an ungodly amount of money.
probably $45 million a year. But if you're paying him $45 million a year, I think you and I would 100% agree that that means something positive yes. happened in that 3-year window to the point where you're like, okay, this is great.
That's yes. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Let's talk. Let's come up next on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's now move on to the actual free agent market, offensive side of the ball. Who are the players that fit what the Cardinals need? Who are some splash moves they could make? And who are some players that might surprise? Because they do surprise us every single year with their signings. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Offensive free agents, who would fit? If we're looking at the different positions, obviously, running back is going to be an area. Receiver, they're going to want to do something. Tight end, they kind of need to do something. And offensive line that's a wild card. We don't know what the plan is there exactly. Running back, do you see them in any scenario going and making any sort of a splash? Because Aaron Jones is available. And
I mean, I've been told that they like Aaron Jones. Now, you can, like anybody you want. It doesn't mean that A, they like you back, or B, that you can afford them.
So he would be the splash move. You would sign him to a. I don't think you would be getting. I know he's probably going to look for Todd Gurley, David Johnson money, say from a couple years ago, but you're probably going to. If they get him, it's going to be more of the 10 per year average, I think, rather than pushing the 12 to 15, which we've seen, because the running back market has suppressed a little bit. Because he's not Christian McCaffrey. He's not Christian McCaffrey. He's great. I would be surprised that that's the position, because I think there's some capable guys who you can get on a 1 or 2 year deal and be effective and be as effective as they were in the running game these last couple of seasons.
And I want this to be understood that one, Jess and I are not advocating to not signing him. If they do sign him, we both agree from a fit perspective, it would be fantastic. The reality becomes at 4 years, $52 million, with, say, 20 of that guaranteed. That's a lot of money for a running back.
And big running back contracts have rarely paid off in the last 5 years.
Yeah, and so that would be one of the reasons Jess and I are, I wouldn't say opposed is the right word, because I don't think we are opposed to it happening.
Yeah, I just don't think that's where they're going to make a surprise signing. That would be a surprise. Now, running backs that I like in terms of fit. Honestly, you know who would also be one of those type of signings? Chris Carson.
Carson would be a good fit as well.
And would be also splashy. And that would be fun because he was a Seahawk. But the running backs I kind of like, and this is my belief, that the Cardinals still want to maintain Chase Edmonds with a significant role in the offense, perhaps even a little more than he had last year. That's their belief in him. I don't think they've always spoken glowingly of his ability to carry the load, but they've never said, he's our guy. He's like, we believe in him and he can do it, but I don't think that's their plan. So, some guys that I really like, I've written a couple of articles about this on CardsWire. Honestly, I think Carlos Hyde, the other Seattle running back, makes a nice, inexpensive, quality fit. Been a starting running back, been a bell cow. And based on his signing with the Seahawks last year, is willing to take a complimentary role at this point of his career. Jamal Williams, who's been playing behind Aaron Jones, I think he's a nice fit. Mike Davis from Carolina, in terms of running style and ability, also is a nice fit. Those are all players that I, if I'm looking at the running back position and I'm going with the assumption that Chase Edmonds will still maintain a significant role in the offense, and so you don't need a workhorse, I like those three guys. And it doesn't necessarily mean, to me, it doesn't necessarily mean that I have a favorite. I like any of those guys in that role. Now, Aaron Jones, fantastic. Chris Carson, also really good. I like that fit there as well, because he does bring a physicality to the running game as well, with some burst. Kind of the one thing about Kenyon Drake, he had size, but he also had burst. They just didn't, for whatever reason or not, that those short yardage situations they struggled with. And we would love to see that moving forward. A guy on a Malcolm Brown with the Rams would be a lower, that he'd be a much more complimentary to Chase Edmonds rather than a kind of a 50-50 guy. But Malcolm Brown has held that short yardage role with the Rams the last couple of years, and he's really good at it.
Yeah, and there's one name I wanted to add to that list, and that's Gus Edwards of Baltimore. I think Edwards would be a really nice fit. We've seen his success with Lamar Jackson. Obviously, Murray's not used as much in the run game, in the designed run game, as Jackson is, but he's just as lethal. I think Gus Edwards would fill that kind of complementary role if they are truly looking at Chase Edmonds to be kind of the bell cow. And Edwards has had, big games in terms of number of carries if Edmonds proved to be not able to maintain a full season workload. I think Edwards would be a great compliment and a guy you could probably get for a handsome 2-year, $7 million type dollar salary.
Receiver's an interesting position to me, because the splashy moves they could have made, they can't make anymore, because those guys like Allen Robinson and Chris Godwin have been franchise tagged. And so you've got Kenny Golladay, who now becomes the number one receiver on the market. Juju Smith-Schuster, who I think Pro Football Focus, it was who put them as a perfect fit. Then you've got some other things. But you feel like their splash move at receiver was Hopkins. And I know they want to address the receiver position. How splashy do you think they're going to go? Honestly, a Juju, I think he's a really good fit. But I think he, at his age and production level, I'm betting he's looking for much more than the Cardinals would be willing to offer.
Yeah, and you look at it, Golladay is going to be the top guy. You're probably talking around 4 to 5 years at $20-plus million a year. So you're probably looking at right around 5 years, $105 million on what Golladay is going to expect command. I just don't think that's even plausible. It would definitely be a splash. You'd have the best receiving duo in the NFL, and you just signed J.J. Watt, so that'd be a great, fit. But after that, another kind of splashy but certainly not as expensive guy, and wouldn't it be hilarious if they signed Will Fuller?
Another ex-Texan. Now there are some concerns there, as he had that suspension at the end of last year, so yes. There is that minor issue, but in terms of profile, he is the exact sort of receiver to have opposite DeAndre Hopkins. Oddly enough, that's exactly what they had with the Texans.
And so one name that I haven't heard from a lot of people that I would love to see would be Corey Davis out of Tennessee. He's shown that he can be that high-end complimentary number two, big physical guy. I think he'd fit well across from DeAndre Hopkins. And then I think he'd actually create a great scenario where you get a guy like, now you can move a guy like Christian Kirk inside, or Andy Isabella, and allow them to work. he's looking at maybe 13 to 15 million a year, which is still a lot of money. Don't get me wrong, but you're talking, you know, 5 to 7 million less. I think he'd be a nice fit. And though, I mean, right now, obviously, we're talking about what you and I would describe as high end type of guys. The final guy that I would put as like a clear cut number two, if he were to sign, would be T.Y. Hilton, the veteran from the Indianapolis Colts, older. I think he's 31 now. You could probably get him at like 7 to 9 million a year, which I think would put them in a great, great spot to have a veteran number two receiver that complements Hopkins well and is able to do a lot of stuff. So,
and then this is not splashy at all, but a player, under the radar player who's kind of been under the radar his whole career despite being a first round pick, would be Breshad Perriman. Never had that big year, but is coming off a fairly productive season with the New York Jets. He was coached by Sean Jefferson, who is now the wide receivers coach for the Cardinals. Talented former first-year, first-round guy. Got some speed. He is, if you read the off-season publications, that he is, every off-season, is the high-value, like the low-cost, high-reward receiver who never produces the high reward. But if you look at what his production was this past season, you'd say, hey, I definitely would have loved to have that on the Cardinals, because even playing for a Jets team, you know, the Jets, he had, you know, he produces big plays. He had 30 catches for 505 yards the previous year for Tampa, 36 for 645. So he's averaging, you know, each of the last three seasons, he is averaging 17 to 20 yards per reception. And he wouldn't come at a great cost. Like, he would be, and he's not going to be cheap, but he's not going to be expensive. And you complement him with DeAndre Hopkins, and you've got someone who's not going to need a volume. He's not going to command the ball as much, but he's going to be super impactful with the plays that he makes. And that would allow the Cardinals also to push Christian Kirk inside of the slot, where he can become more of a volume receiver. And we're all going with the assumption that probably Larry Fitzgerald is retiring. I think every day that goes by and he hasn't made an announcement makes it more likely that he retires quietly. Unless he is, if he's going to come back for a, you know, veteran minimum, because he's never done that before, that it's got to be the right fit around him. So he's going to want to see if he comes back, and is not going to come back for $11 million, because if he gets past that, that's going to be the thing with Fitz, is if he wants to come back and it's after the first wave of free agency and the Cardinals have eaten him up from the cap, it's going to be a scenario in which he's coming as a role player. And I don't know if he's going to want to do that, especially after, like, he had his lowest production season. So I'm under the assumption Fitz is probably calling it quits, although I will leave that door open for him. I just don't think it's going to open.
And a couple names that we didn't mention that is looking like they're going to be paid less than $10 million a year, that, you know, obviously I think you and I would agree that most wide receivers would fit if they can play on the outside opposite DeAndre Hopkins. But Curtis Samuel, I think he's probably not the best fit with unless they're definitely moving on from Kirk and Isabella. But he's looking, you know, he'll be an interesting guy to follow. Marvin Jones Jr. is another veteran that we've mentioned in the past that I think would be a nice fit. You're probably looking at $7 to $9 million a year for him. Nelson Aguilar is another guy that you could probably get for between $5 to $7 million. There's one more. Hold on. Where did I lose that guy to? Aguilar was my last guy. Sorry. But yeah, so I mean, those are three other guys that you could, you know, that are veterans that could compete, along with like a Brashad Perryman, all doing kind of the same or similar type of ability wise.
Tight end is a sneaky position. I think the Cardinals might do a little splash move in, which is kind of odd considering the lack of production from the position. They like Max Williams, but I don't know if we can, like, he is super important to the offense, but he's limited offensively. And aside from 2019, that man, that player, has a hard time staying healthy. His ankle was an issue all year, from the offseason until the end of the season. Now, there are some nice tight ends out there. Now, Hunter Henry, that's too splashy. But some names that I kind of really like that would be upgrades and would make it so that you don't need to count on Dan Arnold to be more than a niche player, because then you could use these players significantly, and you could release Max Williams, get out of that money from there, because these are guys who can also block. My favorite guy is Jonnu Smith, the Tennessee. Super productive in the red zone, and you know that they trust him. He played, 70% plus of snaps in an offense that was all about Derrick Henry. So in terms of run blocking, you can trust him with that. Other names, Gerald Everett for the Rams, who's played for the Rams, never quite became exactly what his draft status as a second rounder, super athletic. But I think he would make a nice fit here as well. If you're going to go in for like an all in, Jared Cook, he's old now, but still productive, still really good in the passing game. And so I could see the Cardinals surprising people at tight end, considering that, you know, it's not a position that seems to be that important, although it is low-key important. I would love to see Jonnu Smith. I think he would be a perfect, perfect fit for this team.
Yeah, and there's a couple of veterans that, you know, are available now. I think Kyle Rudolph is similar to Max Williams in terms of what he brings, and similar in terms of concerns. You know, but you look at him, a real old guy like a Mercedes Lewis, who probably doesn't fit as much, but is still a really, really good run blocking tight end. If he's interested in that, I mean, you look at what he's done in Green Bay to help their running game. Those are two guys, you know, that maybe. As we get down, and then one kind of other guy that we're semi-familiar with here would be Jacob Hollister, the tight end from Seattle. I think he'd fit in well as well.
There's a name as we go to the offensive line that we feel like is kind of on their radar, and that, you know, we've suggested it. I've heard it from a couple of places, people who have some sources. Offensive line. The Cardinals made it known that they are willing to add to the center position. We expect them to be in kind of all in for Corey Linsley, which would be another splash move, because he will not come cheaply. He'll be $10 million a year plus. Obviously, you can push some of that cap hit into years down the road, but I think that would be a splash signing, and that would kind of change the dynamic of the offensive line as well.
Yeah, and I think Lindsley's going to be their kind of one target. When I say one target, I mean like their top tier target for the offense. That doesn't mean they're going to get him by any means. I just think that that's going to be the guy that they look at first. And then from there, they kind of work their way backwards. Do we want to spend the money on the position? How much of an upgrade is it from a Mason Cole or Lamont Guyard? You know, is there a guy like a Creed Humphrey or Landon Dickerson in the draft that we can get on day two that would be worth it? So those are all things, but I think Lindsley's the guy. I don't know where they would go if they don't get him.
It'd be interesting because, like, if they don't get Lindsley, how do they say Mason Cole, Lamont Gilliard? Would they then go after some of these other, you know, if I recall, Nick Martin might have gotten signed already.
But you'd have like a David Andrews.
David Andrews, right. Or do they feel like they still got to upgrade from Mason Cole, or is it a scenario where they bring someone who can start, but they'll let Mason...
It looks like Martin's still available as well.
Hey, another former Texan, and they'll bring in all the Texans.
If you're talking about going all in, there's two guys that are older that would make sense, and that's Alex Mack.
Yes.
And then did Mike Pouncey retire? It was only the other
both
one.
Pouncey's, right? Both Pouncey's retired.
Oh, did they? Yeah. I must have missed the other one. But yeah, like an Alex Mack.
Though Alex Mack, I think, is probably going to sign with the 49ers.
I'm sure he will. But, you know, you look at that, you know, Andrews. But Lindsley is 30. Andrews is 29. Ted Karras is another interesting guy that's not bad. I would think it would be Lindsley. And then, you know, maybe they'd be willing to go get a David Andrews for, you know, $7 million a year. But I don't think it's as important as I think after Lindsley, I don't know how hard they go after anybody else is what I'm trying to say. Like, if you're not going to clear upgrade where you're getting one of the better centers in the NFL, then I don't know if you're really looking to upgrade, if that makes sense.
Right. Do you think that they, if they can't get Lindsley or a center, that they try and throw some money at a right tackle? Or do you think that they have something in plan? Whether I'm guessing Beecham might be their priority and that might be the way they go, but could you see them? Because that's the one position that I don't really have a gauge on at all right now.
You know, it's interesting because Sean Coogler's comments about Josh Jones really make it seem like they're not focusing on Jones being the starting right tackle. Now, that doesn't mean he can't be. It just feels like they're looking at it as they feel comfortable if he had to start or play at right guard or right tackle. Right. Probably throw left guard in there as well. But
and that's the funny thing is because when they give that information willingly, that's something, because when we were thinking about Justin Murray and about playing right tackle, even from the time that Keim signed him, they talked about his position flexibility, his ability to play guard. No one asked him if he was going to play guard. No one asked if Josh Jones was going to play guard. They just said, yeah, he's position versatile. He can play guard, which tells me he's playing guard this year.
And so, you know, the thing I'll look at, and we'll talk about this later on, but the way that they've heavily scouted these offensive linemen makes me think that they're looking at right tackle at 16. And I mean, you can look at that one of two ways. One, this is a good tackle class. I mean, Rashawn Slater from Northwestern, Elijah Vera Tucker from USC, Christian Darrisaw from Virginia Tech could all be in play at the 16th pick. All guys that have played really well. You wrote about it the other day, the Oklahoma State kid who's real kind of, he gives you that ready to go type of vibe. What is it?
Tevin Jenkins.
All those guys are projected to go in that, you know, 14 to 32 type of range where they're first round type of guys. So that's what you kind of, you look at it and you say, okay, well, you know, would they really want to have Jones and a rookie right tackle? But then you look at it and you go, well, they probably could bring back Beecham, like we talked about earlier, on a cheap 1-year deal again. And if they're seriously, and obviously we'll never know this for a fact, but if they're seriously pursuing Corey Linsley, well, it would make sense that you would want a veteran kind of guy in the middle to help out those young guys next to him.
Cardinals on the Rise Up here at Podcast SR of Cardinals Talk on the Web. We'll come back for the final spot to talk about defensive free agents. Who could be the guys that the Cardinals add on defense? That's coming next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's go over to the defensive side of the ball. Obviously, they made their big move with J.J. Watt. However, they need cornerbacks. And I think that's kind of the number one. That's the position my eyes are on, because what are they going to do there? If it's not Patrick, how are they going to do that? The splashiest of splash moves that I think they could do is pull off a deal for Marshawn Lattimore and then sign him to a big extension. What that would cost is uncertain. With, you know, I had someone suggest that rather than giving up a pick, you know, swapping the Saints both first and second round picks. I don't know if the Saints go for that. I'd kind of go for that, because the Cardinals then don't lose any picks. They just lose pick value. I don't know. I don't think the New Orleans goes for it. But if you feel like they're going to make a splashy move at corner, whether it's trading for Lattimore, maybe it's because the Bengals didn't use it, William Jackson might be, he would be a perfect fit scheme-wise for what the Cardinals do. What would you see them doing at cornerback? What would be the splashiest move you'd see them making?
It's tough. I mean, you look at, like we talked about earlier, Peterson's market value is right around $10 million a year. Would he be willing to take that? It seems like the answer is probably no right now, but I mean, we'll find that out as we get closer. From there, you look at it, there's a bunch of slot cornerbacks, but I don't know if they're ready or willing or able to move Byron Murphy outside. So that brings up a couple guys. One is veteran Xavier Rhodes. Wouldn't be splashy in the sense of a long-term type of deal. He's coming off a really nice season in Indy, though. You could probably get him for like 3 years, you know, $20 million, maybe 2 years, $15 million. That would be a nice fit for them. The other would be Ronald Darby, who's had kind of an up and down career, but is a guy that has got, you know, good ability and could be a nice fit for this defense.
Don't look at the Eagles Cardinals game at all, though. Just don't.
That's also, you know, super young still, which is different when you look at that. You know, and then you've got like a William Jackson III. You know, his market value seems to be around $9 million a year. Would you be willing to put him in that, you know, between 25 and 27? Would you be okay with that? I think that's a tough question to answer. But this is a good season to need cornerbacks in free agency, because I think that there's going to be some good ones that are available that maybe won't break the bank. You know, even a guy like Shaquille Griffin, right, coming down.
Yeah. The thing with Griffin, he's a you don't want him to be your number one. We've seen he makes really flashy plays, but he also gets beat quite a bit. So like, I don't want him as their splash move, as long, you know, as a complimentary move, I'm good with.
And then, you know, from there, you do have some veterans that you could probably look at. I talked about Xavier Rhodes already. You know, Richard Sherman is available. I'm not sure
I don't hate that idea, honestly. I don't hate the idea of Richard Sherman.
And then, you know, a guy like a Jason Verrett, he didn't sign back yet, right?
With no, the 49ers. And had a nice season. He's a guy that I would also, I wouldn't hate that. I think he obviously, after the injury bug with Robert Alford, you'd hate to kind of count on Verrett. He did stay healthy last year, but so talented and yet so injury prone.
And so that's the other question. I know one of the guys that a lot of people are interested in or bring up is Gary and Connolly, a former first round pick. He, you know, he hasn't been great. You could probably get him on a small deal where you look to, you know, maybe take advantage of him not having a big market. And then Bashaud Breeland's another one. I think what we found, though, the last couple of years is that the position of cornerback is important. I don't want to downplay its overall importance. However, we've seen that if you can create constant pressure and force teams to get rid of the ball quickly, that a lot, and you have cornerbacks who tackle well, that almost plays more into the need. Now, obviously, the Rams went and got Jalen Ramsey, but the year they went to the Super Bowl, you know, again, their corners weren't anything to write home about. Aqib Talib was older at that point, and so, I mean, you look at the 49ers, they did it with Richard Sherman, who was not the same guy. Obviously, the Chiefs won the Super Bowl, and Bashaud Breeland was their top cornerback. I think that it's an important position. I just don't know if it's as desperate to have a true, you know, lockdown type of guy if you've got guys like J.J. Watt and Chandler Jones who are creating so much pressure up front that teams can't get into a rhythm, which I think gets overlooked quite a bit.
Yeah, that's if they're creating great pass rush, the coverage will be better. But you need guys that are just capable back there that aren't going to give up too many big plays. I don't know if the Cardinals will make any other splashy type moves because they're defensive starters. You got Buda and you got Jalen Thompson at safety. So you need a reserve who can also start. I don't know if Deontay Thompson, if they yet quite believe in him as a starter because they kept using Chris Banjo in that scenario. But they need cornerbacks at outside linebacker. I think we already know it's going to be, I think it'll either be Reddick or Golden. I don't think they go out and splash with anyone else. And at inside linebacker, you know, they've already got Jordan Hicks and Isaiah Simmons, and I think they're going to roll with that. And so, yeah, I don't know if there's any major moves left for them on defense. I do see them, what I think would be wise is to sign a starting caliber, a veteran nose tackle who can play either just the two downs or has a little bit of versatility, someone who you can trust while you're waiting to see on Lawrence and Fotu moving forward, unless that guy's going to be Corey Peters down the line later in the offseason. Domantepeko, I don't think he's going to re-sign in the early offseason. He's now waited to sign till November each of the last 2 years. I think he's going the route of the Jared Valdir, where he waits till November, signs with a team that might go to the playoffs to get that postseason without the preseason. Get the postseason without the preseason.
And I think, you know, there's some interesting guys. You can go, you know, big signing like a Dalvin Tomlinson, who's had a really nice career. You know, he'd be a $8 to $10 million a year type of player. Or you can go on the opposite end of that and get a veteran big man like a Jonathan Hankins for like you know, $2 to $3 million a year. That's had a long career in the NFL. So there's definitely some choices they can make. You know, I don't know if a guy, you know, or you bring back a guy like Lawrence Guy, who has, you know, had a really, really good career in New England, played for a long time, and, you know, is kind of that perfect complementary piece.
Yeah, those are all good fits. Now, obviously, the Cardinals have made surprise signings each of the last few years. Last year, I don't think any of us had Jordan Phillips or Devondre Campbell on our radars. In fact, on everything that we wrote on our sites leading up to free agency, I know I didn't think about Devondre Campbell or Jordan Phillips. You go back to kind of the moves they made. You know, the DeAndre Hopkins trade, that came with a little bird giving me some information there ahead of time. But we know the Cardinals are in a position. This is the thing. Michael Bidwell does not want to rebuild slowly. And while we did see progress from 2019 to 2020 and from 2018, the disaster, to 2019 to 2020, they're not looking to slowly get better. They're on schedule. They expect to be good this year. Their goal is to be Super Bowl contenders this year, not just make the playoffs. And they want to, obviously, that's the first goal, make the playoffs. Steve Keim is making moves with urgency. And in the NFL, you know that you can do that. He understands the window that they have with Kyler Murray's rookie contract. And year three, year four is kind of the sweet spot. If you can do it, you build so that this year and next year you're in the best position to potentially make a run in the postseason with your cost-controlled quarterback before that cost becomes prohibitive. And while you still compete after that, you just have to go with the understanding, okay, now we're paying the quarterback a lot of money. He's now got to be the guy. This year and next year, you can still build your roster so that if your quarterback is a star, it's great, but you don't need him to be on his game 100%. They want to win. That's why they went and got Hopkins last year. That's why they signed J.J. Watt. This year, they're not going to say they're going to be Super Bowl contenders, but that's what they're trying to build.
And that's their belief of where they're going towards, and that's why, you know, we've talked about it. The idea of, like, the Watt signing showed that that's what their thought was, is that we're not going to worry about positions. We're going to worry about getting better basketball players. And right now, that's what they're working towards more than anything else. And, you know, I think it's a fair way to build things. I, you know, I don't know if you and I would have necessarily gone that direction, but we'll see how it works out. And the reality is too, is, and I wrote about it today, and I know you wrote about it this week with, you know, Pro Football Focus dropped their mock draft, you know, the post J.J. Watt signing, and they still had the Cardinals taking Christian Barmore, the defensive tackle out of Alabama. And you might go, well, why would you do that? But the reality becomes, I think that they're, you know, when you look at the way to build a team, one, you can't force it. And if there's not a corner that fits, as we just kind of discussed, creating such a good to potentially great defensive line lessens the burden of needing, you know, really, really good corners in terms of just pass coverage. And so I think that's what we're seeing right now, is maybe they knew that they weren't going to be in the cornerback market as much as they would want to be. So that what they're doing is they're creating this, they're getting ready for, you know, a run at creating a really good defensive line that can compete and ease the transition for whatever corners they do bring in.
And with that, we will end this episode 300 of the show. And we will take a week off next week, because if we were to record last week, we wouldn't know anything else about free agency, because we will be just creeping. We'll be starting to get trickle in with the rumors and such. So we will be back in 2 weeks. It won't be our free agency preview. It will be our free agent reaction show. What will the Cardinals done? And then we will start heading into draft content in the weeks to come. So on behalf of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening. As always, we'll be back in a couple of weeks. Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms, so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.
Yeah.